While President Donald Trump resolutely demanded wall construction along the U.S.-Mexico border, Democratic lawmakers rejected a White House proposal with wall funding and temporary immigration provisions that would end a partial government shutdown now in its second month. The Senate is expected to vote on a resolution Thursday, as well as a Democratic proposal for stopgap federal funding through February 8th. Both bills would require bipartisan support to pass. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says President Trump has already been invited by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to address a joint session of Congress in the House chamber.
He accepted. She cited security concerns as a potential reason to delay it. Those concerns were addressed by the Department of Homeland Security, the United States Secret Service. At this point, we're moving forward.
The Republican bill appears unlikely to become law. It could be a starting point for further negotiations and deliberations, according to one Democrat. Former U.S. Marine Paul Whelan has made his first public appearance in a Moscow court to hear the appeal of his arrest on suspicion of spying. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma.
At the appeal, the judge upheld a previous ruling for Whelan to be kept behind bars at least until the end of February. Whelan's lawyer has told Russian news agencies when his client was detained at the end of December, he'd something with him that contains state secrets. Whelan had been a frequent visitor to Russia and that he'd asked an unnamed person to email him something about travel around the country. Whelan reportedly was not able to download it and then asked that person to put it on a flash drive. I'm Charles Ledesma.
U.S. intelligence agencies trying to plot their course for the next 4 years are facing an ever more chaotic world complicated by rapidly changing technology. The concerns were outlined Tuesday in a new national intelligence strategy as the U.S. government remains mired in a month-long government shutdown. This is VOA News. The tradition of holding a daily White House briefing for reporters may have to come to an end for the Trump administration, AP correspondent Jackie Quinn explains.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says there is no reason to change the date or the location from the traditional speech. She says House Speaker Nancy Pelosi already extended the necessary invitation for the president to appear before a joint session of Congress.
He accepted. She cited security concerns as a potential reason to delay it. Those concerns were addressed by the Department of Homeland Security, the United States Secret Service. At this point, we're moving forward.
The White House was also reportedly looking at alternative locations, but has also placed a request with the House Sergeant at Arms for a walkthrough to prepare for Tuesday's scheduled address. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow said on Tuesday that trade talks could wind up helping China, but at first barriers have to be eliminated.
But the Chinese economy is slumping. I've been saying that for a heck of a long time. I guess I was criticized for it 4 or 5 months ago, but it turns out now that's a consensus point of view. The Chinese economy, by the way, some of it because of our aggressive actions on tariffs, I think some of the economic slowdown can be attributable to that. The president wants to make his point and punctuate it, and he has. So now we're at the table, which is a good thing.
Last week, Kudlow said that the United States and China were making progress on trade negotiations, but reaching a deal would take time. The Chinese Vice Premier Liu He will visit the United States on January 30th and 31st for the next round of trade negotiations with Washington. Venezuelans will take to the streets Wednesday as the opposition hopes to capitalize on several weeks of momentum and force a change in the government of President Nicolas Maduro, who has overseen economic collapse and the erosion of the democracy. A spate of protests in Caracas on Monday, sparked by a brief military uprising, have spread hope that a new leader of Congress could unify the opposition and dislodge Maduro, who this month began a second term under a barrage of criticism that his election was illegitimate. One person has said that he would be willing to replace Maduro as interim president with the support of the military to call free elections. The opposition-controlled Congress, considered by many abroad as Venezuela's last remaining bastion of democracy, has declared Maduro a usurper, and the United States has thrown its backing behind the opposition. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, January 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's Labour Congress prepares to resume strike action after rejecting government's offer of a 27,000 naira minimum wage.
The highest organ of the Nigerian Labour Congress and other labour centre will have a formal meeting to make a pronouncement for the resumption of the suspended strike action.
Abiodun Arimu is the Secretary General of the Labour and Civil Society Coalition of Nigeria. Zimbabwe's president offers an olive branch to the protesters, but the opposition says he cannot be trusted. South Africa's president calls for lifting of sanctions on Zimbabwe. Kenya University students protest against extrajudicial killing of students. And Liberia's President George Weah marks 1 year in office.
I today reaffirm our commitment to the promotion of peace, protection of human rights, freedom of speech, and the development of our beloved country, Mama Liberia.
President George Weah of Liberia, and using fashion to tell the stories of African migrants in Italy. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The National Executive Council of the Nigeria Labour Congress will meet this Friday to decide on the resumption of a nationwide strike over minimum wage for Nigerian workers. This after the Labour Congress Tuesday rejected 27,000 naira new national minimum wage adopted by the National Council of State, chaired by President Muhammadu Buhari. A tripartite committee had recommended a 30,000 naira minimum wage. Abiodun Arimu is the Secretary General of the Labour and Civil Society Coalition of Nigeria. He says the Labour Congress will not accept anything less than 30,000 naira minimum wage.
From the part of Joint Action Front and the Labour and Civil Society Coalition, we reject the decisions of the National Council of State. There's already a consensus recommendation by the tripartite committee. And what the government is expected to do is to ensure the enabling bill for passage into law by the National Assembly.
You originally wanted how much for the minimum wage?
It was 65,000. But we have passed the stage of negotiations. It is consensus at negotiation table that 30,000 naira should be the minimum wage for Nigerian workers, and that we expect to become an act of the parliament. We don't expect anything from any other quarter than to have the 30,000 irreducible minimum wage.
What do you expect will happen now?
There was a strike that was put on hold. So we are expecting the necessary organ of labor to meet and declare that indefinite strike action to enforce the consensus earlier reached. We have passed the stage of negotiation.
The Nigerian Labour Congress put out a statement saying that the workers should not be held responsible for any development after its meeting on Friday. What does that mean? Are they threatening the government?
It's not a threat. It's a call to the resumption of the strike action. The positions of the NLC that labor unions should not be accountable for whatever necessary actions workers deem fit to take to enforce the consensus on the 30,000 minimum wage as agreed by the tripartite committee. So we expect labor to hold on to the suspended strike action. Yeah.
It seems to me that the federal government is supposed to send a minimum wage bill to the National Assembly Wednesday, January 23rd.
So we're expecting the organs of labor to make the necessary pronouncement for the resumption of the strike, and we are back to defeat.
As I was saying, Nigeria is voting in February. Is this politics or you are standing up for the workers?
That is irrelevant. The question of the minimum wage has been long overdue for 2 years and 9 months. What we expect from the labor union is that the highest organ of the Nigerian Labor Congress and other labor center will have a formal meeting to make a pronouncement for the resumption of the suspended strike action. We don't expect anything less.
But as I said, the government is going to present the bill to the parliament.
Anything short of the agreement of 30,000 naira, it will be rejected. And that's why the strike action becomes inevitable.
Abiodun Arimu is the Secretary General of the Labour and Civil Society Coalition of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Abuja. Yesterday, Tuesday, was the one-year anniversary of the government of Liberian President George Weah. Mr. Weah took over from Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Africa's first elected female president who led the country for 12 consecutive years. Some opposition leaders say Mr. Weah's first year in office was a disaster. As Moses Gaziewu reports from Monrovia, President Weah and officials of his government held a prayer service Tuesday to thank God for his guidance in the first year.
The singing from the National Traditional Choir was part of the many spiritual exhortations that took place at the Thanksgiving service held Tuesday at the Dominion Christian Fellowship in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. A spirited President George Weah then walked up to the podium to sing a famous stanza from a song of Nigerian gospel singer Mercy Chinwo.
Love me too much,
After putting the audience in amazement, President Weah then reaffirmed his government's commitment to upholding free speech, peace, and human rights.
I today reaffirm our commitment to the promotion of peace, protection of human rights, freedom of speech, protections of women and girls, and the development of our beloved country, Mama Liberia.
The Archbishop of the Pentecostal Church in Liberia, Asewinka, called for a united front to move Liberia forward.
And I believe President Weah is God's choice for Liberia at such a time as this. So I call upon all Liberians, home and abroad, to rally support for President Weah to succeed.
But Weah's government has been criticized by members of the opposition for failing to deliver on his campaign promises. What exactly did the Weah government achieve in the last 1 year was the question I posed to two of his cabinet ministers, Mobutu Yimpan and Moses Kwali.
We've made significant strides in this direction. If you look around you today in Monrovia and its environs, and outside Monrovia, we have roadworks going on in nearly every corner of our country. Thanks again to President Weah for his sagacity. And thanks to us at the Ministry of Public Works for being prepared, ready and willing to execute his mandate.
However, many of the opposition thinks the Weah government have a negative scorecard in key areas of governance. Emmanuel Gonkwe heads the Economic Freedom Fighters of Liberia.
I can say for free that, you know, most of the integrity institutions are just living on the name that they are integrity institution. But in terms of functionality, they are far distant away from, you know, the actual purpose for which they were established.
Youth activist and student leader Martin Kwali led a protest in 2018 against the Weah government after it was disclosed that $16 billion Liberian had gone missing.
Look at the state of the economy today. A lot of young people do not have jobs. Companies are shutting down. The government has lost control over the management of our fiscal affairs. And the guys are enriching themselves.
Another opposition leader, Charles Walker-Brumskine, leader of the opposition Liberty Party, says in a statement that the first year of the Weah-led government has been characterized by allegations of corruption and impunity. The song of praises to God for a birthday celebration may just not be enough to say how much the people are feeling on the first anniversary of Weah's government. The president will have the opportunity to explain the accomplishment of his first year in office when he addresses the nation next Monday. Moses Gazil, VOA News, Monrovia.
Today's Wednesday, January 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. The leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change has called for unrestricted speech, the right to demonstrate, and the unconditional release of all prisoners of conscience and political detainees. Nelson Chamisa was reacting to President Emmerson Mnangagwa's appeal on Tuesday for all political parties as well as religious and civil society leaders to come together for a national dialogue. Mr. Mnangagwa, who cut short his foreign visit to return home Tuesday, promised to investigate reports of violence against demonstrators. Nkululeku Sibanda, spokesman for Nelson Chamisa, says in order to dialogue, the people must be free.
The problem with the messages is that it does sound as though the statement he made was a rumble. He went on about punishing people and went on with the unbelievable lie that the military and the soldiers were not the ones on the streets. In fact, they were deserters and people with stolen weapons. So that, unfortunately, waters down the quality and value of the statement. But President Nelson Chamisa has said, look, it is important for us to go into any national dialogue with a level of sincerity in which we deal with the question of people who are being arrested, people who are incarcerated for political reasons, and also that the soldiers that are still on the streets must be removed and the people of Zimbabwe must be guaranteed their right to freedom of expression and freedom of speech. Any dialogue without that will be disingenuous.
I think the president has gone out of his way to say that the violence that took place during the recent protest is unacceptable. Don't you think the president is trying his best to bring everybody together?
The problem with that statement is that it is being made by the president of the country, who is charged by the constitution with the responsibility to maintain the peace and also to deploy military assets outside their barracks. If he's saying that the soldiers were deployed without his authority, then certainly he's failing to uphold his constitutional responsibility. It is therefore very difficult to believe what he is saying until he explains how and why the soldiers were on the streets shooting at people. I must underline the fact that we have 12 people confirmed dead all in the cities, and we have 78 people confirmed shot and in critical condition, and hundreds who are in hospitals across the country, and many more who are scared to go to hospitals and are suffering in silence, in hiding.
So what do you make of what the president said that, I know he defended the right of people to demonstrate, but he feels that the protest got out of hand because your protest was not peaceful?
The bulk of the violence was in areas where members of the security forces and ZANU-PF youth, who are members of the party of the president, were responsible for instigating the violence, for destroying property, and for looting businesses. It is therefore disingenuous for the president to pretend that the violence was in any way instigated by protesters who were by and large peaceful. The president has to be honest first if he's going to move forward and attempt to bring the country together. That is what President Nelson Chamisa was saying. President Chamisa has dealt with the country that has been saying, you cannot trust Mnangagwa. He does not say what he means. It does not mean what he says. He said things in August that he did not fulfill. So for that reason, people are saying, we do not want you to trust Mnangagwa because he says things to buy time and does not mean it. And the president is saying, if he is genuine, he must stop the repression that's going on.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. He spoke with us from the capital, Harare. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has called for sanctions on Zimbabwe to be lifted, saying this action would help the country's shadow economy recover. Ramaphosa, who is to attend the World Economic Forum in Davos, made a stopover in Geneva to attend the centennial celebration of the International Labour Organization. Lisa Schlein reports.
6 months after presidential elections were held in Zimbabwe, that country finds itself in a very difficult, dangerous place. The euphoria that gripped the country after former President Robert Mugabe was ousted from power is gone. Food shortages and skyrocketing fuel prices have triggered mass protests. These have been met with deadly force by Zimbabwe security forces, which reportedly have killed at least 12 people and wounded hundreds more. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says his government is in serious talks with Zimbabwe on how to help it emerge from its economic crisis. He says this will not be easy to resolve, but he believes Zimbabwe's economy could begin to recover if the world would lift the sanctions it has imposed.
It is no longer necessary to have sanctions against Zimbabwe right now because they have embarked on a path of democracy and on a path of real recovery. And we will help them best by lifting those sanctions, because that in many ways would relieve the tension that is currently in the country.
During the Mugabe regime, the U.S. and European Union imposed travel and asset restrictions on top ruling party officials, top military figures, and some government-owned firms in response to election rigging and human rights abuses. The sanctions do not apply to the country as a whole. VOA asked if lifting sanctions now would rob countries of the leverage they have to try to persuade Zimbabwe to improve its human rights record and to govern in a more democratic way. The South African president, who was participating in a news conference on a different subject, told VOA he was unable to respond to the question.
I've been directed and instructed not to say anything further on Zimbabwe. And as a law-abiding person and member of this commission, I shall duly do so. So my mouth is closed about Zimbabwe.
Ramaphosa is co-chair of the International Labour Organization's Global Commission on the Future of Work. He is in Geneva for the launch of the report. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has decided to skip the World Economic Forum to attend to problems back home. But no such constraints are keeping the South African president away. He says he is bringing assurances to the elite Davos gathering that South Africa is no longer tethered to the unethical practices of the past 9 years. That is a reference to his predecessor, Jacob Zuma, who stepped down last year while mired in corruption scandals. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Kenya University Students Organization yesterday, Tuesday, staged a demonstrations to the capital, Nairobi, against what they term an increase in extrajudicial killings of students across the country. The students, who came from different universities across Kenya, marched to parliament buildings to present their complaints and to seek justice and prompt action for recent cases that they say have so far been neglected. Maureen Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
According to Kenya University Students Organization Chairperson Anthony Manyara, at least six students were killed by police in 2018. Speaking at the Parliament building in Nairobi, Manyara said that it is high time the National Assembly promotes the observance of human rights at public and private learning institutions.
In solidarity with parents and relatives of students who were killed in an extrajudicial manner in this country, that was last year. Last year we lost more than six students from our universities. Most of them, they are well known to Kenyans.
But it has been in the norm, it has been in history, that the police are not allowed in the premises of students, especially where they reside. We would like to put them on notice that it is just a matter of time. Do not provoke a comrade. Inform them and warn them categorically, without fear and contradiction, that we will deal with them if they try to disturb the peace of comrades.
The police have since rejected claims that they have used excessive force on protesting students. Manyara says there are accumulated cases of students shot by police officers while demonstrating and that they no longer have faith in the courts and investigating agencies since both institutions take too long to deliver justice. He says the students have proposed a bill to initiate police reforms.
A bill to bring police reforms be initiated, amongst other things, the security agencies to be beefed up with the communication devices and other relevant equipment, among them patrol cars. The 999 emergency dial number should be restored and to be fully functional to enable the relationship between the members of the public and the police in curbing insecurity in our dear country, as social security to each and every Kenyan is a fundamental right. The amendment that we as comrades want be started to introduce harsh penalties to the criminal procedure code and the penal code for anyone found guilty for extrajudicial killings.
The students say they also want compensation for victims of police brutality and extrajudicial killings, as well as public apology from the police. Another student, Lon Ankada, says justice should be served to affected students.
When the cases are forwarded, nothing is done about it. So that's why we are here to take our petition to the parliament.
The recent case of alleged police killings of university students was that of Carlton Minor, the Leeds University student who was gunned down by police in Nairobi's Kibera slum on December 21st last year. Also in February last year, Evans Njoroge, a student leader at Mary University of Science and Technology, was shot dead by anti-riot police during students' protest over fee increment. The Independent Police Oversight Authority says the cases are being investigated and that authority will make appropriate criminal and disciplinary recommendations to the Director of Public Prosecution. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Fashion label Akira Jones uses style as a tool to refocus the narrative on migration through its luxurious scarves that intertwine migrant stories and Renaissance-like paintings. The scarves were featured in the blockbuster film Black Panther. The label's founder, Wale Oyejide, a Nigerian immigrant who works in the United States, Italy, and other countries, tells Ricky Schreier that he sees fashion as a vehicle to tell the stories of marginalized populations such as African migrants in Italy.
And you hear about the story in the periphery, but you hear about it in a way that is really not humane. And so we tend to forget that these people are people just like any of us, and that we could be in those situations or before, you know, the lottery being born elsewhere. And so my work is very much an effort to depict these people as they would hope to be seen in a way that's beautiful and just in a way that reminds us and them that they are more than the suffering that they may have endured.
One of the things you obviously do are scarves that are very beautiful, very reminiscent of Renaissance paintings. Why did you decide to marry this idea of the story of migration with look of kind of a typical Renaissance painting that you might see in a European museum? You know, where did that idea come from and why?
On a basic level, the first impulse is when the childhood version of myself might have walked into the Louvre or walked into a classic museum of any sort in London or New York, it would be rare that I would look up on a wall and see a depiction of myself that was like the height of beauty. And when I would see myself, it's typically in the background as a subservient figure, like carrying a vase to the royalty. So on a base level, it's injecting, when I say myself, I'm speaking just in generally for people of color, people who are minorities in the West, injecting us into the pantheon of what beauty is, like literally making us in the image of what the West accepts as beautiful. And that's not to say changing who we are, but injecting ourselves into that narrative. When you know the people accept a vision of beauty, if you put people that they might be biased against into that narrative, it's difficult for them not to see these individuals as beautiful beauty.
What's your process like? You document things. I think that's why it's interesting, is like you're documenting the stories before going into this design process often. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the general, it's almost like a two-phase thing. So phase one will be the design where you create, or I create, we create a collection that is hopefully kind of using the methods we just discussed, depicting people of color from various backgrounds in ways that are beautiful. So we make a design collection, whether it's clothing or scarves, accessories with that. And then phase two is we then go and meet with the migrant population and adorn them in these clothings. And we create short films and interviews of them. So we're using their voices and their perspectives and photo essays. And so we then basically use these individuals who might be on the outskirts of society and use them to present their own stories, and we cast them as models, and we pay them as models as well. And so what happens is you're now, it's almost like a double layer of not only is the clothing and the art referencing their journeys in ways they're beautiful, we're using the individuals themselves to be presented as beautiful because that combats the narrative and the depictions of them usually.
That was Wale Oyejide, founder of Akira Jones fashion label. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Philadelphia. Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa news. The National Executive Council of the Nigeria Labour Congress will meet this Friday to decide on the resumption of a nationwide strike over minimum wage for Nigerian workers. This after the Labour Congress Tuesday rejected 27,000 naira new minimum wage adopted by the National Council of State. That is it for this Wednesday, January 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Thank you.